Both the U.S. and the Nicaraguan leadership team are here today. Unfortunately, a member of the international leadership team traveled all the way to the United States from Nicaragua to present and got ill. And so she's not going to be able to present today. She's not here, but we're going to read a translation of her presenter notes verbatim. I have no disclosures. We're wrapping up our work, and we'd like to reflect and share what we've learned from the experience of sharing leadership across geographic, cultural, and socioeconomic distances. I'd like to just to take a moment and ask how many people are involved in international nonprofit work here or have been involved in the past? Okay. And how about how many in Latin America? Okay, great. Oh, well, hopefully this is relevant for you. And it'd be great to get your input later. So what we did was we used a structured survey to spur dialogue between leaders of nonprofits with international and local leadership teams in one specific area. The local staff of our organization interviewed other local leaders, and I interviewed foreign leaders. And by foreign, I mean not in Nicaragua, either the U.S. or Spain. We independently extracted three themes to illuminate the different perspectives of the international and local leadership teams. We compared notes to see the differences, similarities, and areas to bridge gaps. Three interviews were conducted with international leaders and four with local leaders. One organization has no single outside leader, and we weren't able to schedule one each of the international and local leadership interviews. Two larger nonprofits that we initially approached, hoping to get a broader cross-section of types of nonprofits with chapters in multiple countries, actually declined participation on the local side, even despite assurances of confidentiality when we just asked general questions about funding. So the insider-outsider quality methodology leads to reporter bias, and there were difficulties scheduling and conducting local interviews in an optimal manner that we hope to address in future work. I have some ideas for that, too. And a copy of our sources and a copy of the survey questions themselves are uploaded to the speaker's corner, where theoretically, I don't know exactly how to access it, but everyone should be able to access it. Okay? And of course, you can email me, and I'll send you whatever you like if you're curious. So, NGOs, nonprofits, are not, as sometimes claimed, nimble non-state actors that go in a needs-based fashion where governments fear to tread. In fact, they cluster together because a combination of secular changes, government efforts, and their collective work make everyone look good when it comes for funding time. NGOs exist both as part of the grassroots social change movement based on Paulo-Freirean principles and also as agents of the priorities of big funders in the developed world through the aid chain, where money and ideas flow from donors through foundations to international NGOs, and ultimately to place-based international NGOs and community service organizations, I'm going to call them CSOs, working in pairs. Now, the drivers of these behaviors are simple. Nothing is certain in the life of an NGO besides death. The ways in which nonprofits cheat death act as selective pressures for how they evolve. And grassroots organizations that accept aid money exist in an uneasy, impossible space, pulled between trying to maintain the benefits of direct grassroots action and being able to demonstrate this to donors that simultaneously want to fund local partners and indigenous organizations, but carry with them requirements that pull these organizations, same organizations, away from the communities. Now, there's numerous types of leadership employed in nonprofits. But in a hierarchically flat organization, like a community service organization, managing distributed leadership without falling into a leadership vacuum is a key challenge. Of course, the opposite trap is founderism, the pathologic reliance on founders even after the organization has outgrown the conditions of its foundation. This can lead to corruption, abuse of power, and disempowerment, and it's widely documented. And the literature specific to grassroots nonprofit leadership in these settings is sparse and spread throughout multiple disciplines. Everyone get that? It didn't do that on the Mac, but it's the most important part of our presentation. I hope that's what you take away from this. But I want to talk to you a little bit about, and that cartoon was meant to demonstrate, the fact that local leaders who live in the communities that they may be working in essentially exist in three worlds. And these three worlds are the arbitrary timelines imposed by donors, the international donor community, their peri-urban work setting, and the communities in which they live. Taking stances that affect local distributive justice, i.e. who gets what, can be difficult to impossible without causing serious personal repercussions. To navigate these challenges, local nonprofit directors must be boundary crossers, defined by Kilpatrick as individuals who can coexist in several social networks simultaneously and translate between these different worlds. It would be a fool's errand to try to describe the emerging leadership qualities noted in successful leaders in what we call the Global South, but two studies in Malawi and South Asia showed that successful nonprofit leaders in these settings are role switchers that offer the form of leadership that the context demands. Power relationships hinder bilateral open communication. And if we acknowledge the research demonstrating the importance of individual relationships and organizational partnerships, such as by Brown and Lister, this is a pivot point at which inter- and intra-organizational partnerships succeed or fail. However, leadership turnover can then lead to loss of trust. Nicaragua is among the poorest countries in Central America, but also among the safest and most literate. It has endured frequent and bloody U.S. meddling in its national affairs since the 19th century and remains scarred by both a great earthquake and three generations of brutal dictators. I've included a couple great books about the recent history of this land of lakes and volcanoes, a country of poets and revolutionaries, in the bibliography that's uploaded somewhere on the interweb, the APHA interweb. I neither want nor expect you to absorb these next two slides, but they'll be useful if we have time for questions. They profile the five different small to medium-sized organizations whose leaders we interviewed. The first organization was founded several decades ago by a couple who visited Nicaragua from abroad. There's been a relatively stable local advisory board, but a great deal of turnover in the international leadership team. Second is an organization that has a foreign board that became less formal of structure over time and a local leadership team that have become integrated somewhat into the board. The third organization has an informal board chaired by its director and a large local staff. The fourth is a local business with a foreign owner that contributes to the community through a de facto community center. And the fifth is a chapter of one of the Nicaraguan organizaciones de masas, the Nicaraguan grassroots organizations founded in the 1980s. This goal is to improve the lives of children with disabilities, but they do accept a significant component of international funding. The next part was meant to be presented by Ivania Sanchez, one of the local leaders on our team, and my colleague Sarah Nunn is just going to go ahead and read her part verbatim, okay?
If you do have questions about the more insider local perspective, we do have one of our other local staff here for questions later on in the presentation. And if you speak Spanish, go ahead and ask directly, and if not, I'm happy to interpret. Okay, so I'll just read Ivania's sections then here. I'm sorry for the poor eye contact. I am going to just be reading this. Hi, my name is Ivania, and I'm going to talk to you about the local themes and a few relevant quotes that came out of the local leadership interviews. The comment of these that I would like to focus on is that those who think they know what's best for others will always end up disappointed in their endeavors. An example of this would be an organization that creates their own projects with the vision of doing something good, but since that vision is not based on a true community needs assessment, their work is not necessarily beneficial. Now I'm going to talk to you about local leadership themes. Limited presence and availability of international leaders due to different schedules, time constraints, and distance can lead to volunteers and local staff feeling under-supported and can also lead to delays in problem solving. Another common theme is that came up in the interviews was that external financing can and should be mixed with local financing. This can increase economic autonomy at the local program level. Ecotourism is a really common and good example of this in Nicaragua. With regards to the selection of local leadership, most of the local leaders were internal candidates. This can lead to more appropriate outlooks among the leadership. This is within the study group. Some organizations impose projects from outside. This came up multiple times. A hypothetical example of this would be a project related to water storage containers, say, but during the process of this project being implemented, it turns out that what the actual need is water. So they don't have water to even store in these containers, and it turns out that what really was needed was a well, but that didn't come up initially. The last thing I would like to mention is that there are two very different leadership perspectives that came up during the interviews. These are the local perspective, which is more realistic, and the international perspective, which tends to be highly theoretical, and that this can lead to misunderstandings and frustrations.
Thank you. To continue, just to be clear, we threw the organizations in the blender here so as not to shed a particular critical light on any one particular organization, and besides our own, which we're open to, so that we could get sort of a quorum of themes. These are quotes from the international interviews, three international interviews that I did. I think the first two quotes speak for themselves. The third quote is meant to relate to the difficulty getting constructive feedback when a problem was encountered, and the frequent use of intermediaries locally to resolve problems. So difference in sort of international communication styles and cultural communication styles. Some of the themes that emerged from interviewing the foreign leaders is that there's a lot of talk about the boards, and its functions seem to range from raising funds, serving as a gatekeeper to further resources, or even depoliticizing locally made decisions, I mean. Quote unquote, it's easier for an anonymous board in the U.S. to say no, one leader said. In other words, in their opinion, this U.S. decision-making board protects locals from distributive justice-type decisions that might blow back in their faces locally and on the ground. The formulation and formality of boards had complex effects on helping or hindering local decision-making, and turnover of foreign boards was a focal point for misunderstanding and loss of trust. Now, the data collected by local leaders is not always necessarily the data that's desired by the international leaders. Quote, I often hope for more when a grant is due. I get lots of long, detailed reports that don't have any fund or relevant organization. The same director then noted that local leaders had prioritized a local fair to grant preparation. This leader also noted that they had not been very transparent about funding issues. One leader noted that neither the founders nor the local staff had the cultural competence to effectively work together. Difficult and costly local NGO registration processes could delay strong local leadership development due to inability to create stable jobs. This is a theme. It's not my criticism. Now, we learned of organizational cultural interpreters, people that played the role, not necessarily leaders, about communicating cultural values back and forth. A common trend in some countries in international development work is diaspora professionals coming back to serve this role. This is extremely problematic if the reasons for the diaspora are political, such as in Nicaragua, potentially introducing even greater misunderstandings and forgivable foreigner faux pas. In our research, people marked by a cultural experience in the area often return later to assume this role, or to assume the process of growing into this role. Now, founders can be, but are not necessarily boundary crossers. We believe that boundary crossers are made of a mixture of opportunity and openness, and that while founders may not always be retrainable, emerging leaders who demonstrate emotional intelligence can be trained across boundaries and serve as cultural interpreters. Now, several methods of sharing leadership across borders. First, one organization fit into the Fund Abroad and Lead Local. Another attempted to merge their program with existing services as sort of an exit strategy. And then most of our other organizations existed in a transition between the local management and outside leadership model and the integrative shared leadership model. The area of strongest agreement between international and local directors had to do with emotional intelligence, seeking to understand before seeking to blame. It requires curiosity about why there's a misunderstanding, patience in resolving issues, and openness to the idea that you could be wrong. There is no room in the kinds of organizations we discuss, with the pressures they face daily, for people who do not have or are willing to improve these skills. Ultimately, both the local and international leadership must have the competence and EQ to be able to cross boundaries and assume the perspective of communities in the professionalized development world. Do I have 30 more seconds? Thank you. Leadership sharing structures are not static. Plans for transitions of leadership need to start early. You need to find a way to evaluate whether you're building shared cultural value. And it's hard to switch between the testimonial and the hard truths. This was observed in at least one of our interviews. To function and improve shared leadership, two distinctly different types of communication are often necessary from local directors, and straight talk that focuses on the greatest weaknesses of a program, and donor material that focuses on the greatest strengths. Often in the form of anecdotes and testimonials. The relationships you build in nonprofit work are some of the strongest and most fraught you will ever build. This is hard work, and there's a thin line between delusional and aspirational thinking that is only if it is ever determined by the results of the work. And no one ever really knows what they're getting into. But by starting frank discussions about these challenges and strategies and motivations, We can help existing leaders lower the barriers for new ones to work effectively across borders. Thank you so much.